The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He is Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley. As we move into a Thursday, Gary, how are you?
I'm doing good. It was a really interesting day yesterday.
Neither one of them's ever talked to the president, talked to Chief of Staff Mulvaney, or talked with Mayor Giuliani. And as I said with Ambassador Taylor, he had three meetings with President Zelensky, and all three of those meetings, never once did this idea of linking security assistance dollars to an investigation ever come up.
That's Jim Jordan. Here's Adam Schiff.
By inviting Zelensky to do these political investigations, and more than that, did so by conditioning a White House meeting as well as ultimately hundreds of millions of dollars in military aid needed by this ally.
So that's not illegal, and nothing is wrong with doing that.
Right.
What Adam Schiff just said, you know, it's interesting because the Wall Street Journal pointed out, they said, if you want to see the case at its worst for Trump, listen to Schiff's opening statement.
Right. Still not impeachable.
And let me give some help to the Democrats. Because what has their biggest narrative been? That if the members of the Trump administration do not voluntarily come forward, if they refuse to voluntarily come forward, even without a subpoena, that is obstruction of justice, and the term that they're using is consciousness of guilt, correct?
Yeah.
Well, then allow the whistleblower to come in. Allow Hunter
right.
Biden.
Yeah.
Catherine Chalupa, who worked with the Ukrainians on the 2016 investigation. Otherwise, you can't say there's a consciousness of guilt on one side and not another side. Can't play it both ways.
Nope.
Now, as we stated yesterday, if you start using that consciousness of guilt because you won't willingly testify, as we said before, no administration is going to do that, because then Congress could say at any point that we need you to basically testify what you did last week. The executive branch isn't going to do that. Congress doesn't have oversight over the president. They can impeach him. They don't have oversight. They may have oversight over departments of the executive branch, like the FBI, Department of Justice, and other branches, because they're the ones that give them the money. So they may have oversight there as to where that money goes. They don't have oversight over the president.
No. No, they don't.
That's like saying that Adam Schiff then should testify about everything that he was involved with. Otherwise, he's guilty. So if you want to play that game, we can play that game all day. But what it gets down to is, where's the evidence of a crime that Americans, even in a political process, believe is necessary for impeachment of a president?
You know, watching this circus play out during the day on Wednesday, I thought, you know what? It's great that they had to get to the public portion of the hearings, right? That they had to put this on television because, you know, on some things, America kind of tunes out. But see, what the Democrats did was they built this big promise once again to their rank and file that they were going to finally get Trump. And everybody was tuned in. The problem for the Democrats is they had nothing. So behind closed doors, testimony, all right, then they can, the media can edit, as they did, leave out things, omit a number of pages of testimony, so it looks like things are really bad for Trump. When you watch it play out and they really, you know, they put on the show, they built this big promise over nothing. It was embarrassing. I was embarrassed for the Democrats because I thought to myself, you and I have been talking about the vote. I still believe there's no reason to believe anything has changed on the headcount. But I think there is certainly some thought by some of those Democrats in the middle that are looking at this going, we've got enough. The first day, think about this. The first day in front of public eyes, this was not quite as bad as Mueller, but worse than Strzok and Comey. This was embarrassing once again. This was supposed to be deliver up the, you know, the all of the facts here so that you can build the case and finally march up to the top of the mountain with your torches and scare away the big monster and get him out of office. Nope. Couldn't play out. I mean, it was about as empty today and laughable as anything that I've ever seen. And if this is the way Adam Schiff is going to conduct the rest of this, honestly, I can't wait. Because it was highly entertaining because it confirmed what all of us have known. That they really have nothing. They had nothing from the beginning. And their best witnesses, their star witnesses to start the first day of public hearing, were empty. Second and third and fourth hand information.
Well, it was when the New York Times yesterday, their breaking news, this was early on, breaking news, Bill Taylor revealed significant new information in his testimony saying his aide was told by Gordon Sondland that President Donald Trump cared more about investigating Joe Biden than about the Ukraine. And that's when I said to myself, well, that is the REO Speedwagon song, because Taylor would be the friend, heard it from a friend. He would be that friend who heard it from a friend who heard it from a friend that you've been messing around. And just for the sake of it, I put it on Facebook to the New York Times. You should have seen the reaction from I was called a MAGA moron that I have blind loyalty to Donald Trump.
Yeah,
that
right.
He can do no. I mean, it really was amazing. You know, called a loser, which you know hurt me. You know, deeply. But
I'm sure
it was. It's amazing that when and again, I don't go overboard. I just found it humorous that it actually fit the lyrics precisely that you actually and they just that those lyrics are what the right wingers are using. And I just kept saying, yeah, but it's factually accurate, and nobody would debate that part of it. It really is amazing when you deal with the liberal trolls. Their goal is not to find the truth at all.
No. They don't care.
You know, they believe that if you name call, they really believe that if you name call, it affects the opposition. And as we've always stated, it just makes your argument weaker. You know, it's almost like the liberal media that paid such huge attention to the new saying from liberal folks from Generation Z, the okay boomer. Oh, they finally found a response. And as I told you yesterday, I said because it was directed at conservative boomers, not at liberal boomers who think exactly the same as liberal Generation Zers or Generation Xers or millennials, right?
They all, liberals. I've seen it used different ways, but yeah.
Right, but I mean, it's just
a dismissive comment,
right,
in general.
But they forget that we grew up in the generation, sticks and stones don't hurt, sticks and stones will hurt my bones, but names will never hurt me. Mm-hmm. What they failed to remember is those people, you know, boomers, have a lot of experience, and name-calling means nothing to us. It means something to you. That's your response. That's your emotional response because of the fact that you cannot intellectually come up with coherent thoughts to debate. Otherwise, you do. But it was, you know, I just got a little taste of it, which I enjoy. It's entertaining, but I wouldn't want to do it every day. But what amazed me the most yesterday, because I just, you know how we talk about the Republican Party that, and we've criticized the Republican Party because we align more with Republican thought. Not all of it, believe me, if you listen to this show. But we are closer to the Republican Party than we are the Democrat Party. We constantly are criticizing the Republicans for not messaging right. And we, how many times have we said you've got hundreds of millions of dollars, billions of dollars over the year to message something that is so easy to do and you fail to do it? And so we've been quite critical of Republicans for that, right?
Yeah.
Well, probably our biggest complaint about the president is that he doesn't message correctly.
Yeah, right.
Well, let's spend a little time talking about the Democrats yesterday, or the Democrats just all along on impeachment. You, as you said, you felt a little bit embarrassed for them.
Yeah, I did.
I couldn't believe. I understand how emotion and hatred drives them. And if emotion and hatred drives you, that means you don't cross your T's and dot your lowercase J's.
Mm-hmm.
And when you are driven by that, you believe there's, I think, a false sense, an arrogance, a false sense of confidence that you have what you need, and you never have what you need to convince the independents. And that's what I saw yesterday, and I was just amazed because I think to myself, these are adults who have all the money in the world to investigate and message correctly and sit down and go over this a million times, to the point where you and I are thinking yesterday, and we said it on the air, they got to have something they're hiding in reserve. You can't go in with you can't go in with this weak case for impeachment. And they did.
They did. They really did, you know, and it's funny, during the majority questioning, they allowed the counsel for each side, majority and minority, to interview, to ask the questions. I thought, okay, that's interesting. But you have essentially the breakdown of the minutia, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you're following along, it's like that, you know, it's like a calculus and really tough math. Once you get into the groove and you understand it, you follow along nicely. But if you miss a couple of days of class, you forget it forever. You don't know where you are. You lose your place. If you were following along during some of the questioning from the majority counsel, I thought, okay, this has to be their tactic. Go into the very minutia of it, right? Ask details about questions that will build up to a bigger point, but don't focus on the bigger items, which are these guys don't have firsthand knowledge and any contact with the president on these items. It was just, I just thought that's the only way you can make this last, is to break down these the questions, the back and forth. That's what the minority did, or what the majority did. Well, after the break, you come back, and the minority just went at him. I thought Jim Jordan did a really good job in pointing out, you know, the fact that, you know, there's no firsthand knowledge here. You look at the basis for all of this, and that's where the left, you know, wanted to really distract you. They wanted to move away from it. The basis of all of this. The very fundamentals of it. And that's what they did through their counsel in the questioning. The Democrats just wanted to stretch it out, I guess. Make it sound more nefarious than it was. And you still go back to the transcript of the call and the actions by the administration. And you've got two things, diddly and squat.
Yeah, it's a lot of time, and I know in the past we have people that will call and say, don't you understand, the Democrats and liberals are so well planned, and we've in the past said, well, actually at times they're not, and we've said this actually about the Democrats over the last couple of weeks as they've approached this date, and when, you know, even the testimony came out from the closed-door hearings, we were like, wow. But still, as much as I understand that they're driven by hatred, revenge, anger, insane rage, not anger, insane rage about what we can't figure out. We know what it's about. We can't figure out why there is such intense rage about it, except that they believe their own delusions that they couldn't lose in 2016. But still, I was amazed how unprepared the Democrats were. Look, when you got Jeffrey Toobin from CNN saying, there's a problem that the first two witnesses never met the president before.
Right.
Yeah, there's a problem when that happens, and it's a problem when you start talking about, I heard it from this guy who heard it from this guy, that the president probably thinks this way.
Yeah.
And those are your lead witnesses. You're in trouble, and even the left understands it, and did on Sunday when we talked about the media response, where they said, well, they got to make an emotional case here. They've got to be crying. They've got to go on, as David Ignatius said of the New York Times, they have to go in as if they're soldiers fighting against you know, the evil of the president. Yeah. Otherwise, it's going to come across as policy differences.
Yeah.
And so they knew it. They knew they were thinking the same thing we were. These Democrats aren't prepared.
Right. Well, and they're not. They're not. I mean, Taylor was all over the place. And thank goodness, you know, Jim Jordan and others were on their game on the right to point that out. Yovanovitch will testify on Friday. I really can't wait to see that, because that's the one where they said she cried during the behind closed doors testimony.
Right.
So is that going to play out the same way on Friday?
We've got a great show ahead. If you'd like to get in, we'd love to hear from you. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Hurley. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE.
Ambassador, you weren't on the call, were you? The president, you didn't listen on President Trump's call and President Zelensky's call?
I did not.
You've never talked with Chief of Staff Mulvaney?
I never did.
You never met the president?
That's correct.
You had three meetings again with Zelensky and it didn't come up.
And two of those they had never heard about, as far as I know.
President Zelensky never made an announcement. This is what I can't believe. And you're their star witness. You're their first witness.
Now, Taylor's response was, I'm not a star witness. By the way, you don't make that call.
I know. Here's the thing. You didn't. I shouted at the TV, but you didn't subpoena yourself.
Yeah.
They brought you here.
And they brought you in first in order to create as much excitement that, okay, we've got something on the president.
Yeah. You know, he goes on to say, you know, I don't favor one side or the other. That's funny because you answer like you do. You know, there were times when he's asked about Ukraine and, well, the Ukrainians didn't take that. They took that very seriously. It was, you know, about Crimea. And then later he was asked by a Democrat another question. Or no, he's asked by a Republican another question about Ukraine. And he goes, well, I don't know what the sentiment in Ukraine was. Well, you did just a few minutes ago. It was just bizarre. For Travel Centers of America, here's your forecast.
The storm system that brought snow across the interior Northeast and Great Lakes has departed, leaving in its wake record-challenging cold, a gift from Canada. Winter-like air sits over much of the eastern United States. The intensity of the cold will ease during the second half of the week across the eastern half of the nation once the expansive high-pressure system moves off the New England coast. But in most places, temperatures will generally remain below average. Across the center of the country, a fast-moving clipper system has spread snow and some light freezing rain across portions of the plains and Midwest. A ridge of high pressure over California means continued dry and settled conditions across the state. Rain and snow chances will increase across the Pacific Northwest and the interior as an upper-level disturbance moves inland. Amounts are expected to be on the lighter side as the system quickly passes through the plains and into the Great Lakes region by Thursday. There's your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm Christopher Cruz.
Unstable Radicals, Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
866-90-RED-EYE. If you would like to get in, we would love to hear from you.
In this impeachment hearing today, where we impeach presidents for treason or bribery or other high crimes, where is the impeachable offense in that call? Are either of you here today to assert there was an impeachable offense in that call?
John.
Shout it out. Anyone?
Oh, sorry. Shout it out.
Yeah, right.
John Ratcliffe there, Representative Ratcliffe. Look, should I give advice to the Democrats? Why not? They're not going to use it, right?
Yeah, go ahead.
Do they ever use any advice that we ever give them? And I started on it, and I got sidetracked because there's so much stuff. There are so many different things going through my mind after, you know, watching that yesterday, the zoo that it was. But if you truly want to win your case with the American people, because I noticed this on yesterday on social media. Well, yeah, it's all hearsay, but Bolton knows the truth. Well, then subpoena him.
Right.
Go through the process of bringing him in.
Right. They can do that.
If you believe he has the evidence, do it.
Yep. You're going to have to demonstrate to the courts that this is the will of the American people, but I right. think you can do that.
Right. Bring Bolton in because you say he is the one that will be able to, without question, think about this to all of you Democrats out there who, for the last almost 3 years, absolutely in your heart know that Donald Trump colluded with the Russians and Donald Trump should now be impeached.
Yeah, right.
Well, your people are claiming Bolton is your guy, and yet they won't go after him. The other thing is the weakness to the Democrats' case is the fact that there can be two reasons why you do something as a politician. You may do something that is in the best interest of the United States, but also may be in the best interest of you, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And this gets to the whole, as we have said before, Hunter Biden problem that the Democrats have. Call Hunter Biden as a witness. Because if you say Hunter Biden, again, has got nothing to do with it, there was that Joe Biden did nothing wrong and Hunter Biden did absolutely nothing wrong, it would be tough because those emails that John Solomon was able to get from the Freedom of Information Act is going to kill that and Republicans are going to jump all over that. But you've ignored that mm-hmm. over the last week. You've ignored that completely. See, the New York Times had a hit piece on John Solomon.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's funny because I saw that starting on social media over the last several days.
Mm-hmm.
The hit piece is coming out on John Solomon.
Because he's quite effective in what he does. And mm-hmm. so you can sit there and say, oh, he's all part of the crew now of Hannity and everybody. And,
yeah, right.
And there was, I think it was the American Spectator that went through the different points of the New York Times article and just blew it apart. And yeah. it was on John Solomon saying Solomon must really be getting effective because now they're coming after him saying he's just with all the other guys. Well, maybe all the other guys are saying we like him because he presents the best evidence. Because what does Solomon actually do?
Well, he goes out and he gets evidence.
Yeah, he gets the evidence. He gets the emails.
Yep.
So he may have an absolute bias of absolutely loving Donald Trump and hating every Democrat who's ever been born. But the fact is he brings the evidence to the table.
You can't discount the facts. You can't right. discount that evidence, emails, and right. you know, going back to Sarah A. Carter and the work he did with her at Circa and the court papers that came from, these were the FISA court papers and documents that he got. Okay, great. He's a total hack. Now destroy him based on the evidence he right. brings to the table.
Yeah. Is the evidence wrong?
Right.
Is the evidence tainted? And that's where Democrats, of course, have the problem there. But if you want to win this case, even if there's not an impeachable offense, if you want to make your case, Democrats, and give it much more credibility, then wait for John Bolton. Wait till you have right. the ammunition to do it.
Right.
And this whole thing, well, we need to do it now. Why? Why not wait and get the evidence 9 months from now? Go for all the court orders. Mm-hmm. Do it right in July. Do it right around when Donald Trump is supposed to be renominated again, mm-hmm. and he sails through the Republican National Convention.
Mm-hmm.
He's got 97% of support from the Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
Because you impeached him on bogus evidence, and here you claim you had the evidence to actually not just impeach him, but kick him out of office, and you won't do it. And you can take away the Hunter Biden problem,
yeah.
because you're the ones that are claiming he's completely and totally innocent.
Right.
You're the one that's saying if Donald Trump doesn't voluntarily let everybody you wish to talk to, if he says, nope, I'm claiming executive privilege and the fact that they have classified information, and you don't go for a subpoena on it, why wouldn't you? When they won't do that, as Swalwell and others have said, the Democrats have said, well, that shows a consciousness of guilt. That's the obstruction right there. Well, then you're obstructing the process by not letting Hunter Biden, especially after those emails were released that we found out that the firm representing the natural gas company was trying to get a meeting with the State Department in order for them to lay off their push to look into, you know, corruption in the gas company. By the way, did you see that Kent yesterday said, oh, yeah, we believe a prosecutor took a bribe.
Yeah, right.
I mean, he just
yeah.
killed their...
And that's when the minority counsel was questioning him and saying, do you believe that should be investigated? Well, yes. And shouldn't you also investigate not just the person who allegedly took the bribe, but the sponsors of the bribe, the people actually...
Right.
And so... It was, again, demonstrating what real wrongdoing there is in terms of this whole thing. And I think I think Republicans did a good job. The problem is that as long as Adam Schiff is in control, and by the way, the objections were just over the top. He finally stopped. But the first part of the morning, it was just insane how many times he objected, of course, when the minority was asking questions.
Well, you know, there was a piece in the Spectator, E. Donald Elliott, who said, what about a Biden impeachment inquiry, saying that he did what Trump's accused of.
Right.
You know, and by the way, you can impeach after somebody's in office.
Mm-hmm.
And he makes the point that, and we've always made the point, if you're going to do it, you've got to have consistency. You can't say Trump should be impeached, but somebody who did the same thing that he did, shouldn't be impeached. It's got to be equal across the board.
Right.
If you're going to, whether it's political or in the court system, if you're going to go after one person, you've got to present the argument that you would do it across the board, irrespective of politics. Mm-hmm. And that's why we have attacked the Democrats who have said, well, if Bolton would testify, well, then we'd have Trump. Well, then why aren't you angry at your people for not putting out a subpoena to get him to testify?
Look, you can't say obstruction when you still have a path to bring him there.
Right. And when Hunter Biden, if he will exonerate you and the others, the other people involved in that, and there's a couple others that the Wall Street Journal and others have mentioned, bring all these people forward. Yeah. Bring them in.
Right.
You'll defeat Trump's argument on that.
Yep.
If you believe... There's no dirt there, and you honestly, because you say it's a conspiracy theory, up to just a couple of weeks ago, not anymore, well, then bring him in.
Yep.
Otherwise, there's a consciousness of guilt on your side. If you're going to set the parameters that Trump, there's a consciousness of guilt because he won't voluntarily let anybody in his administration talk to you about whatever you wish to ask them about, well, then you've got to apply it equally to the other side.
Yeah. Look, they have the ability to bring all of these witnesses. They have the ability to get John Bolton there. I mean, Bolton's attorneys over the weekend. You know, he's not going to testify unless the court orders him to do so. Well, go to court, Democrats. Make him show up.
You knew they were in trouble when Representative, was it Mike Quigley, the Democrat, said, quote, "I think the American public needs to be reminded that countless people have been convicted on hearsay."
On hearsay, yeah.
"Because the courts have routinely allowed and created needed exceptions to hearsay. Hearsay can be much better evidence than direct, as we have learned in painful instances, and it's certainly valid in this instance."
Oh, man. You know, it's like, wow. Stop talking.
Yeah.
It really is, you know, with the two witnesses and their answers demonstrating, you know, that this is hearsay again and again, and him saying that, ultimately, that is right there. I mean, that's the botching of the whole thing. That was the Mueller moment. It was because everybody, even this past weekend, well, it's not necessarily hearsay if they're on the inside. It's hearsay if they hear it from another person and they weren't there firsthand. Plain and simple.
Now, you did hear that emotional support dogs were sent to Capitol Hill yesterday. For congressional staffers. I wonder what congressional staffers needed to be around emotional support dogs.
Yeah.
Was it the Republicans or was it the Democrats?
I'm guessing Jim Jordan's staffers didn't need any comforting. I'm guessing.
All right, your calls and comments coming up next. If you'd like to get in, 866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Let's go to Clayton in Anchorage, Alaska. Clayton, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Thanks for having me on the show. I appreciate it. I was just calling to talk about evidence. I've been a lawyer for about 40 years. And, if you went with witnesses who testified hearsay on hearsay on hearsay on hearsay, which some of these witnesses have, you'd be laughed out of every court in the United States.
Yeah.
You wouldn't get past a motion to dismiss. And if you were lucky, a lawyer presenting stuff like that, you might be held in contempt of court. This is crazy stuff from an evidentiary perspective. Now, maybe it's legal. It's Congress. They can do whatever they want to. But the fact is, it is totally unpersuasive evidence. It doesn't mean anything. You got to get the best evidence, and the best evidence is somebody that was there, maybe talked to the president, maybe heard the telephone call, somebody who was, had some real evidence, some direct evidence, a piece of paper, at least a copy of an email, something.
Well, at least
crazy.
Exactly. I mean, it would, when they were going over the transcript, highlighted, parts of the transcript. It's almost like they were doing man on the street. Those two witnesses were no better than anybody else that you just read that to in deciphering. Well, what do you think that meant? And what do you think the impact there was? It doesn't matter what they think. It's the only thing that matters are the facts. Plain and simple.
Now, how they would answer
exactly.
you. How
it's
they would
truth. It's called truth.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
What's the truth?
Yeah, exactly.
After, okay?
Yeah, right.
Now, the Democrats' answer to that is it's not a legal proceeding. It's a political proceeding.
Yeah, yeah.
And
don't we know it?
But since they're the ones that bring up hearsay, since they're the ones that are attempting to
legitimize
it, that we're doing this just like we're giving the other side all the protections that we would in a criminal investigation. Mm-hmm. Well, they'll say that when they need that, then they'll say, well, this isn't a criminal investigation. They move back and forth,
right,
depending on what fits them at that particular moment.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it really is. I just thought to myself, and they try and they're really trying to prop this thing up. It, to be something legitimate. And it's just not. It's just falling short. You know, when Jeffrey Toobin at CNN looks at it and says, yeah, this isn't good. You know, I'm paraphrasing, but you're not winning over the rank and file. The activist who doesn't care what you do and how you lie or how you get them impeached. Yeah, you're going to appease them. They're going to have a celebration on the day of the impeachment vote. But when the Senate doesn't remove, they're going to be mad all over again.
You know, I didn't read the article yet. I just saw the headline saying that Democrats now, moderates in the House, are feeling pressure because nothing happened.
This is exactly what you and I were thinking.
That this isn't about Republicans feeling pressure.
No.
We've been saying this,
right?
But that's how they try to spin it.
Right.
We said, no, if they have no more than this, the pressure is going to be on Democrats.
Yep.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and around the world, 866-90-RED-EYE, redeyeradioshow.com, where we stream live. Or if you can't listen live, get our app, and you can listen at your convenience. I'm Gary, he's Eric.
This hour for Freightliner, Run Smart, helping you run more efficiently, is Freightliner's number one goal.
In the news,
he told Reuters there was no blackmail. He told the LA Times there was no pressure or blackmail from the United States. He told Japan's Kyoto News, I was never pressured and there were no conditions being imposed. He told ABC News and the BBC, I'm against corruption. This is not corruption. It was just a call.
I don't know where the Democrats go now. By the way, that's John Ratcliffe. Representative Bracken.
Yeah.
I don't know where the Democrats go. There's only 5 days scheduled for any type of hearing. So this thing, what, should be done next week? I think Thursday's the last day that they're in session before the Thanksgiving break.
Next week, yeah. So you have Yovanovitch on Friday.
Right.
As far as I know, she's the only one on Friday. So you're going to have, you know, you'll start again with majority questioning and then minority questioning and then the back and forth and the sessions. But I don't know where that goes. It probably will go a few hours, maybe. I mean, I don't see them stretching that out that long. I don't know what they have slated time-wise. But I don't know what you get out of a witness like Yovanovitch. Because, you know, if you look at some of her behind closed doors testimony, it was about, well, she was told by people, you know, that, you know, you better watch your back. Essentially that Trump was out to get her or fire her or whatever. And again, the question is, how much hearsay are we going to hear? How much factual information are we going to hear? How much opinion on policy, right? Yovanovitch has served as ambassador for a few different presidents, starting with George W. Bush. She served under Obama and now Trump. If you're talking foreign policy, Gary, you could have gotten how many people in the Bush administration, in any administration, would you have that on staff or even in the cabinet that might, behind closed doors, differ from the sitting president, the president at the time? It's likely a number of them. You know, I mean, this gets down to their opinion on foreign policy. That's really what it is, mm-hmm. because there is no wrongdoing here.
Yeah, it's almost as if his opinion and what he would want to do is is wrong. By the way, the one of the things that should be brought up, and I don't know if I know it's been brought up, but I don't know if it was specifically this was brought up this way. But the they talked about the fact, well, look, during the Obama administration, remember he wouldn't provide the lethal aid to the Ukraine?
Right. It was it was as MREs and blankets as they were calling it today.
Exactly. Yeah. It was humanitarian, even though Congress authorized it.
Right, right. He wouldn't give them the actual equipment they needed for defense.
So to have the concern about we need to make sure before we give you the lethal aid that you may need to defend yourselves, that we wish to ensure that you coming in are going to do what's needed to do on corruption.
Right, right.
As we now know, because of John Solomon and the email chain that he got, there is a concern about the Bidens, and even Kent was concerned about Hunter Biden's role and doesn't think that investigating, their role in what happened there is anything out of the ordinary.
Right.
So when you look at all of this, I don't know where the Democrats go. And we talked about this earlier when Bill Taylor said, I'm not the star witness. Well, you don't get to make that judgment.
Yeah, sorry, but you're up front. You're up first.
Yeah.
That makes you the star.
Right. And so when you are in a political trial, which this is, by the way, because witnesses are testifying. I know it's not officially part of the actual trial of the removal, but it is the trial. This is, this is what's going on here, and you're questioning witnesses. So when you're trying, remember, what they're trying to do is convince the American people. So you go with your best first, because if you got your best first and they've got juicy dirt, then people will stick around, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
If it's born and you tear it apart and you hear it's hearsay, and then you got Jeffrey Toobin on CNN saying, well, it's really a problem as to what's going on. I saw, Chris Wallace saying, well, he didn't sound he sounded non-political, and just these are the things, and that was damaging to Trump. And I'm thinking to myself, damaging what? That you don't agree with Trump's foreign policy?
Right, right.
I'm telling you, when you get to be inside Washington, I believe it's a totally different animal. I really do.
It was laughable in watching some of the analysis of it, because I just had to ask myself, well, wait a minute, were they actually watching it? Or were they actually paying attention to what was going on and how the questions were being answered? Because, by the way, it did come off political. It came off as he had disdain for Trump. That, at the very least, and I won't try and make it personal because I think that's unfair. I don't know, but he did not. He answered the Democrats' questions in a different tone. I think he answered completely, but he was offering up certain things and adding his opinion, his take on it, and embellishing with those opinions more freely when the Democrats were asking questions. And his answers were different when Republicans were asking. And I think it's Devin Nunes was, I think, a very good job that he did in spelling out the aid that Trump has given to Ukraine as opposed to Obama, where, what you were touching on a moment ago. Because the Democrats kept saying, well, this is an ally, and this is, we don't do this, and this is blah, 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 blah. This is wrong to corner an ally. I saw so much back and forth on social media during all this. Well, but Trump gave them more aid, has given them more useful tools than the former administration.
Right.
And where's the left that was screaming, we should do something about election interference and all this? And this is exactly what Trump was asking of Zelensky. Just come in and take care of your problems, what you know of, go after it, and do what you said you were going to do when you were running. You know, it's just exactly what he told Sondland. Make it very clear.
Yeah, it's Schiff yesterday also saying that he doesn't know who the whistleblower is.
Yeah.
And by the way, then he struck out saying, and people are saying, I know and I've met the whistleblower. Well, we never said that. And I don't know anybody who said that he met him.
No, we know that the whistleblower had contact with his staff.
What we have always stated. And,
right.
And I don't know anybody else, maybe somebody he knows, or maybe there's a website or something, mm-hmm. a right-wing website that may have made that claim.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Fox has made that claim. I don't think that, I know we haven't made that claim. I don't know who has made that. The claim was he was in contact with your office. Now, the fact that he says, I don't know who the whistleblower is, then if you don't know who the whistleblower is, how do you know if the Republicans are identifying the whistleblower?
Right. How would you know that? Because he said, you know, you and I were talking during the pre-show meeting, and you made that great point. You said, wait a minute, he's promising to go after and punish anybody who does give the name of the whistleblower. Well, how would you know if you don't know who it is? But here's the thing. Has he met the whistleblower? I don't know. There's no one making that point. Does he know the name of the whistleblower? I believe so. He's lying again. He's doing what he does best. It's the only thing he can do.
Remember, it was the New York Times that said the whistleblower is known to approach Schiff's office with his concerns.
Right.
He went to Schiff's office before he went to the inspector general.
Right.
We know that.
Yes.
And so when you say you don't know his name, that's very, very highly suspicious from somebody who we already know will lie in public, will lie about his office being in contact
mm-hmm.
with the whistleblower.
Mm-hmm.
As I remember the Washington Post giving him for Pinocchio. So that was also... That was also strange.
Yeah, yeah.
But like I said, the whole thing, just an overview, if I'm just looking at it as as a neutral observer looking and saying, are you making your case for impeachment?
Mm-hmm.
No.
No, you're not.
Why? Because you can say, and they want it both ways. They want it to say, oh, we're doing due process, and this is, you know, we're giving the due process that anybody would accord anybody. Well, that's ridiculous. They'll say that, and then at the same time say, well, this isn't a criminal case, and so we don't need to do that. They've been playing it both ways.
Right.
But the fact is, the American public expect a crime.
Yes.
And they actually expect a serious crime.
Yes.
Why? Clinton wasn't impeached, Clinton wasn't removed from office, even though everybody knew what the crime was. There wasn't anybody in it. Now, some Democrats just ignored that the crime was committed and said, well, it was about sex.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I remember doing a show. I was working in Portland, Oregon. And I asked a question one day, well, should it be against the law to lie in a sexual harassment case? You'd be amazed the number of people that called my show. Remember, Portland's a very liberal place, and said, no, 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 no. Would they have said that before Clinton? Probably. Well, of course, you should punish if somebody lies in a sexual harassment case while under oath.
Yeah.
But they said, no, not in a sexual. That shouldn't be against the law is what we got. So, look, we've got long memories on this show. We don't practice tunnel vision.
Yeah, I wonder if you ask the same people today, okay, great, does that apply to Harvey Weinstein?
Yeah, exactly. So, when you approach impeachment, the American public does expect a serious crime, not just a crime. I know.
Mm.
We went through the remember, he wasn't removed from office.
Right.
Even though everybody could identify the specific crime, and that wasn't up for debate by anybody.
Right.
as many people have pointed out. Okay, now you've moved to bribery. You had to move from quid pro quo because apparently you couldn't convince other Democrats, or you believe that Democrats who voted for you just couldn't understand what that meant.
Mm-hmm.
So then you move to abuse of power, and then you realize, okay, we can't do that. And now we've moved to bribery. And as the Wall Street Journal said, have you pointed out the bribery section in the law that applies to this? And then we know Adam Schiff said, well, I'm going by the not today's modern legal use of bribery, the term, but going back to how the founding fathers looked at bribery.
Yeah. Like, because they can't build a case.
No. But Americans expect a crime, and they expect a big crime in order to overturn an election. And the Democrats have not produced anything close to that except policy differences.
Yeah, that's it. You have difference in opinion. That's what you have. I don't think it was right for him to do this. I wasn't comfortable with that. Is it an impeachable offense?
No.
The answer is no.
866, even though we understand you can impeach for a ham sandwich,
mm-hmm.
by the protocol and the history of impeachment in this country and the seriousness that was taken. And remember, the Congress, remember Hillary Clinton was on that staff, they put together what you actually needed for impeachment back in the Nixon days.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that?
Yep.
Does it fit anything that they came out with there?
Nope.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Tips from J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated on the Drug and Alcohol Clearinghouse. Personal information. Beginning January 6th, driver information will begin appearing in the DOT Drug and Alcohol Clearinghouse. Your employer, medical review officers or MROs, and substance abuse professionals or SAPs will all populate the database with violations and treatment information. Here are some examples of what will be included. Positive drug tests. Positive alcohol tests of 0.04% or higher. Any refusal to submit to a DOT-required test. And documented actual knowledge of prohibited drug or alcohol use. All of these items will be included in your account. The clearinghouse will also show when drivers successfully complete a treatment program, negative return-to-duty tests, and when follow-up tests were completed. When your clearinghouse information changes in any way, you will be notified. This tip was brought to you by J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated. Visit us at jjkeller.com.
This has been the Meritor Driver Report, brought to you by Pilot Flying J, Shell Rotella, and Meritor Aftermarket. Run with the bull.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio, 866-90-RED-EYE. We go to Gary in Arizona. Gary, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for taking my call. I'm going to try to articulate this so you can understand it. I guess my main point is, and I'm curious what your feeling is, the main point of the hearings is that I don't think anybody believes the Senate is going to vote to impeach. So the real import of the hearings is how does it affect voters?
Oh, yeah.
And my concern is that I couldn't believe that the polls, you know, which are questionable, seemed to show that 42 or 47% of the people thought Trump should be impeached. I mean, I was astounded at that. But my concern is that most of those people are watching mainstream. And my concern is, what I'm wondering is what your opinion is about how the impact on those people is going to be. Because in spite of what you said about one of the CNN guys, I heard a whole bunch of spin in all the mainstream media today, and I'm just concerned.
Well,
that
yeah, but you're talking like you're surprised by this.
It's not new.
This isn't new. This has been going on.
Well, I know
this has been going on since Trump.
I know it isn't new.
Right. This has been going on since Trump has has been campaigning, and as we have stated the last couple of days, as Jonathan Turley, who is a constitutional law professor and not a Trump fan, believes that, you know, that this was meant to fail and just to have a wounded Trump going in to the to next right. year's election, that they yeah, believe that right. this will favor them. Right. As to the fact of, you know, however the polling question was asked, look, there are probably at least, I can't say whether it's 40%, but I'll say there are 40% of people that want Trump impeached for anything.
They want him gone.
Yeah, I mean, that's just the reality of our country right now.
Right, sure.
That's
so you start with a baseline right. of 40.
Right.
Yeah, but and by the way, that same poll, if it's the poll I think he's referring to, dropped within just a few weeks from 51 to 47. So right. is that trend on the way down? But yeah, you make a great point, Gary. You're going to start at 40%. That's your baseline.
Page 2, Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Carley. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE.
This hour for Freightliner, Run Smart, helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal. TeamRunSmart.com, a community of tens of thousands, about 60,000 now, part of TeamRunSmart.com. Drivers, you need to check it out if you're not a part of it already. Lots of great information there. The Team Run Smart pros with Freightliner are on the road, and they're blogging from the road, and they've got some great advice, not just for maintenance, but also for downtime stuff. Really great information there at TeamRunSmart.com by Freightliner.
You know, to the last caller, you know, I mentioned what Jonathan Turley the other day, and we said, boy, this is, he's now jumping into politics where normally it's legal things. Mm-hmm. But he said he believes that after the whistleblower came out, that Nancy just could not blunt the far left, that she didn't want to go down this route. But now that they did go down this route and where they are right now, that she wants this thing done and over, that this is destined to fail. And she and others, the leadership of the Democratic Party, want this to fail.
Right.
Because they believe all we can do now is taint Trump. The last thing they would ever want to do is right. have a true cross-examination from a trial in the Senate. They're actually happy if Lindsey Graham says, this is such a sham, we're not even going to hear it. We're done. There's no trial going on in the Senate. You've got nothing. That's what they hope.
Right.
Because the last thing that they want is true cross-examination and an investigation as to what's going on. So what they have come to a decision, he was saying, is, look, we have a complete bogus case. It doesn't go anywhere. We say at least we tried. We can blame Adam Schiff for it. By the way, I'm adding to what Turley
right.
said. I'm adding some of my own opinion in here. And then we just move on. And a damaged Trump, it's something we can use. We can say, first impeached president ever trying to, you know, be reelected again or whatever. Mm. First modern president impeached trying to be reelected. I don't know how they would phrase it. And so at that point, we're damaged. And I do think what Eric said is probably exactly what happened to Nancy Pelosi and the leadership of the Democrat Party. When it first came out, when the whistleblower came out, when they found out that the some of the president's aides and advisors wanted to, make sure that the discussion was classified and put in a classified server.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
and so that it would disappear. That they thought that Trump would never, ever, ever release the transcript of it because it must have been bad. That's why they did that. And they said, boy, we can just screw him now.
Well, because if you take the transcript out of it, if you delete the facts, then you parade these witnesses there, then it starts to look a lot more nefarious. You know, you start to have people commenting on something, even though it's secondhand, people would be more willing, I think, to give them credibility without the transcript. I'm not saying it's right to do that. I'm just saying that's how people would react. If you're following along and you've read the transcript, you know, today, the Democrats were like highlighting parts of the transcript and trying to break down the thought behind it. I thought, you know, you guys may want to stay away from the transcript. You guys may want to, you know, not focus so much on the transcript because it really goes nowhere. But that's what I think just took all the air out of this. I think that's the way it went down.
I think they thought, look, if they're going to put that in a secret server, they're not going to release that. If he won't release his taxes, and look, we know he hasn't committed any crime in his taxes because the IRS would have gone after him for it.
Yeah, sure. Right.
But maybe he didn't make as much money. Maybe he's trying to hide something and he won't release that. He'll never release the transcript. And he did.
Yep.
And at that point, that changed. It you know, it really changed everything because it's like, okay, where's a quid pro quo? And then the testimony from the witnesses just last week, every one of them, was it accurate? Yeah.
Yeah.
It was accurate. Mm-hmm. Nothing really was left out of the conversation. So, yeah, of course they're trying everything in politics. That's why I chuckled a little bit and I said, have you been paying attention? I wasn't trying to be sarcastic to the last caller, but it's like, well, do you understand politics? Of course they use everything in order to try to win the next election. That's a duh. Can we set that as a baseline?
Yeah. Let's get that out of the way.
We set that as a baseline. Of course they're trying to use this in order to damage Trump somehow, because they know he isn't going to be removed from office. So they're trying to make it as damning as possible, but it's blowing up in their face again. Look, after the Russian collusion, you know, to the last caller, understand the other side that, and I haven't seen a poll that has been done in roughly a year. And there was polling that was done for about a year and a half. Was it YouGov? Was it the Economist YouGov that did the polling? Remember the polling that was done of how many Democrats believed that the Russians actually hacked into the election machines.
Right.
Now, there's never been a story written that said the Russians hacked into the election machines. It was just in the first part of 2017 put in a question every single day on the mainstream media. Did Trump collude with the Russians to hack the election? Well, hack the election meant hacking into the election machines.
Right.
It was said so much that it was close to 2/3 of Democrats in the middle of 2017, I think the end of 2017, and then at least halfway through the year of 2018, that it was still over 60% of the Democrats that believed that the Russians hacked into the election machine. Machines, excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
Never been a story that it's happened.
No.
So you can put it into a question form and understand that today's Democrat will believe something that is completely and totally false, and the majority of them will.
Well, and there's no critical thinking applied at all, because it helps to balance the narrative. It helps to carry the narrative forward. It helps to, they believe, ultimately get to a point where we are now. Finally, they're going to impeach Trump. Finally. They are, but they're not going to do it in the sense that it is a fair process. They're not going to do it in the way it should be done. They're going to, you know, the way that they're pushing this thing through, Democrats may believe this helps them on the other side when they can come back, you know, when the Senate takes it up and then boom, it's over. They're not going to remove. And then they can start, I guess they'll start in Iowa. Well, the Senate Republicans wouldn't remove him from office, so. And by the way, that will be interesting to watch the votes there. You brought that up earlier. I think it was last week when you first mentioned it. The Democrats in the Senate, how are they going to vote? You had two Democrats vote with the Republicans in the House. On the large vote, on the big impeachment vote, the final impeachment vote, how will that go in the House? And then when you send it over to the Senate after the first of the year, well, those folks, they don't want to rock the boat. They don't have just a district to worry about. It's their entire state. So how will the Democrats in the Senate actually vote when it comes down to it? Because you'll have, from that, you'll have the, you know, the party leadership and the candidates saying, look, the Senate wouldn't remove him from office, but you can on November 3rd. And that will be the call. But frankly, I think it falls short. I think they're going to come up short and getting enough excitement, because the only thing that will actually do is motivate the base, that 40% you were talking about earlier, Gary, maybe a few points more, but the independents, I don't think are going to be moved by this in the direction of the left.
Well, you know, we're talking about the Senate, but what about the House? Greg Rhea of Fox News said day one of public impeachment hearings puts pressure on moderate Democrats, and he points out House is 431 members. Democrats need 217 yeas to impeach Trump. Mm-hmm. There's currently 233 Democrats. So Democrats can only lose 16 of their own and still impeach the president. 31 House Democrats represent more moderate districts that Trump carried in 2016. And then he says a freshman Representative Elisa Slocum of Michigan, who flipped a GOP district in 2018 that Trump won by 7 points in 2016, told Fox News she is tentatively weighing all the evidence. My constituents expect me to make an objective decision, she said as the hearings concluded, not one based on an hour of testimony.
Mm-hmm.
Slocum went on to acknowledge that launching an impeachment inquiry was a politically tough thing to do. And then they go on to, you know, saying that when you had, for example, the one representative, I can't think of his name right now. The one who talked about hearsay evidence. That's damaging when you do that.
Mm-hmm.
That put pressure on moderate Democrats to say, look, hearsay evidence a lot of times is better than direct evidence.
Yeah.
People know that's crap.
Well, they do. I mean, and by the way, why would you say that out loud? Why would you try and make the case for hearsay? Because all the criticism about this process, the entire process, is that most of the witnesses, it's just hearsay.
Mike Quigley of Illinois.
Quigley, yeah.
It said at one point on Wednesday's hearing, Quigley even appeared to embrace hearsay testimony, claiming hearsay can be much better than direct evidence. And they're saying, you know, you say stuff like that, people look at them and they go, that's just a ridiculous thing and a stupid thing to say, because it shows how, remember, on day one with the first witnesses, and you're talking about, oh, hearsay is a great way.
Yeah.
You know, hearsay can be much more credible. And then they go on to, you know, that, you know, Jim Jordan, when he's talking to Taylor, for example, said this. Ambassador Taylor recalls that Tim Morrison told Ambassador Taylor that I told Mr. Morrison that I had conveyed the message to Mr. Yermak on September of 2019 in connection with Vice President Pence's trip to Warsaw and a meeting with Zelensky, said Ohio GOP Representative Jim Jordan. Reading the statement from Sunland, we've got six people having four conversations in one sentence, and you told me this is where you got your clear understanding. I mean, like I said, it was horrible yesterday.
Yeah, right.
And I started thinking that halfway through, I went, wow, you're going to be forget about Senate Democrats. You're going to be putting a ton of pressure, since there are 30 people have to understand 31 Democrats in those districts. And I asked a question the other day. I said, with this being so weak, does Pelosi hope that they don't even get an impeachment?
You know, I mean, it's you and I talked about this in the pre-show meeting, because during the day I thought about this. If you have these moderate Democrats, enough of them, that look at this and say, there's no way I can pull the trigger here. I can't do that. And they don't actually get impeachment done. she can put it on the committee. She can put it on Adam Schiff.
Yeah.
That's on Adam Schiff.
Yep.
And we went through the process. I let the chairman carry it through the process the way we believed it should have been, and the people have spoken, and then let it go.
And those 31, let's say the 31, or they don't get enough to do it, and then the Democrats, you know, the far left says, okay, we're going to target you and your district. To do what? Have a more liberal candidate?
Exactly.
That Trump won?
Right.
To make it easier for Republicans? What's your recourse there? They have very little recourse in those particular districts if they come out and say, nope, can't support impeachment.
Exactly. You can't go further left.
Yeah, exactly.
Not going to work.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. I'm Gary McNamara along with Eric Harley.
This hour brought to you by Freightliner. Run smart. Helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal.
All right. Since the hearings were yesterday and we spent the last couple of hours going back and forth, breaking it all down, we know a lot of people want to comment on this, so we'll get your calls and comments. Kendall, Wilson, Alan, Jeff, and more, all your calls and comments coming up following the top of the hour. Because we know you'll want to. You want to get your 50 cents in.
I really can't wait to see the testimony by Yovanovitch on Friday. Where do they go next? What's the line of questioning there? Really, they've got nowhere else to go. It's going to be about the interpretation and whether there was, you know, it, because with her, it was about the difference of opinion in terms of policy. Well, sorry, but you don't set the policy. The president does.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and around the world, 866-90-RED-EYE, redeyeradioshow.com, where we stream live. All right, just one more comment. I promise, just one more comment to your calls we go. Because it's just, we were talking about the numbers out there that, because this is now being brought up. It was such a poor performance by the Democrats yesterday. And it doesn't matter for Democrats whether Democrats thought it was great or whether, like we saw Jeffrey Toobin from CNN, thought, oh, it's going to be a problem here because none of these people actually talked to Trump. Or and so if they didn't talk to Trump, it's going to be tough to impeach. And it doesn't matter what Chris Wallace thought either. And Chris Wallace thought, well, okay, well, Taylor sounded like he was non-political, and so some of it was damaging to Trump. Why? Because they disagreed on foreign policy? Really, that doesn't matter. What matters is those districts that voted for Trump that are now held by Democrats, 31 of those. And as we said, Democrats would need 217 yeas to impeach Trump. There's currently 233 Democrats. Democrats can only lose 16 and impeach the president. 31 House Democrats represent more moderate districts that Trump carried in 2016. You have yesterday Democrats stating, hearsay evidence is great evidence. Mm-hmm. You want that to be used against you in an upcoming election?
Yeah.
In 2020?
Yeah.
So that's the problem. I got and I received this an email yesterday saying, if this thing goes as the premise was, this thing went badly today for Democrats. Do Democrats have to hold an impeachment vote? No. This is an inquiry.
Right.
They can come back later on And Schiff can say, well, you know, we still believe the president committed a crime, but we don't wish to go forward with impeachment at this time because it's too close to the election. Look, they're using it as a reason not to bring in Bolton.
Right, yes.
We don't have time. We don't have time. We don't have time. So they're making that up. Mm-hmm. Of course they have time.
Right.
So might Schiff just come out? And if they don't have the numbers, if they do the head count and they don't have the numbers, do you think the Democrats will go forward in the House with impeachment? Do you think Nancy Pelosi actually wants that loss?
No, you don't want to put that on the floor and then know that it's not going to go your way. You're just waiting for the inevitable, you know, big L on the forehead. It's a loser. You're not going to do it. Now, do they also blame the Senate? Listen, we know our colleagues in the Senate are not going to remove him. And so we believe that it's better to get on with the work of the American people.
What do you think their base? What do you think the left base will
do? How would you like to be a stay-at-home Democrat? That's exactly what happens, because think about that. Now combine that with the fact that it's a yawner of a campaign right now in the primary. I mean, there's nothing going on. There's, you know, Bloomberg might get in, but he'll join the rest of you after New Hampshire and Iowa. Hillary, she might get in, but right now she's doing a book tour. And the whole thing just lacks energy. And if they take their own air, most of it very hot air, out of this whole thing, then you've got a base that is not motivated. They're likely not going to be motivated to the extent that they were in 2008 and 2012 anyway. The hatred for Trump is there. That 40% is going to be, you know, I mean, you should always, like we said, you know, for the president or anybody else who's running, you always run, you always campaign like you're 20 points behind. But what is the great motivator? I mean,
the hatred for Trump.
It's the only motivator.
But it's huge.
It's not. It isn't outside the. It isn't outside their base. The independent who's looking at this, even if they were to impeach, the independent's not going to be happy with the way this thing played out. But I have to think that some of their base just isn't motivated. I can't put a number on that.
We're a year out, so it's tough to talk about motivation a full year out.
Right.
I don't know what might motivate them at this point, but this would not, if they decided not to go with it. And look, if they didn't impeach, if they did the vote and didn't get enough in the House, that would be devastating. But I think it'd be just as devastating if they just said, well, look, we're not going to have a vote and lose. Unless they would think, well, wait a minute, then if we have the vote, we can just blame it on those Democrats who didn't vote for it.
Well,
I mean, that would be the decision. Do you go with the vote if you know you don't have the numbers, or do you just have Swalwell say, just like Bolton, look, think about this. He's getting away. Schiff is getting away, and the far left that wants Trump damned to political hell. And he's telling them, well, we know Bolton's got the goods on him, but we're not going to call him. And Democrats are like, okay. And yet they're furious, but Bolton's the guy who's got the information, but we better not call him because it might take too long and we need to impeach Trump now. Really? You don't think there are some Democrats saying, if that's the guy who has the goods, look, you guys have swung and missed over and over and over and over and over and over and over again. But then I doubt the fact that Bolton does have it, because otherwise you'd call him. So maybe you're BSing me again. You keep saying you're going to get Trump and you never do. And then you keep backing off. Then you say this witness has the information that will get to him. And then you say, but we're not going to call him because it will take too long. And we don't want to interfere with an election. Well, we want to interfere with an election. We're Democrats who hate Trump.
Yeah, I mean, if they don't have the votes, I just don't see Nancy bringing that to the floor. I think they make the announcement saying, look, we did the inquiry.
He's guilty.
We believe there's plenty here to move forward on. However, we believe it's more important to do the work of the American people, blah, 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 blah. And also throw in the fact that we know that our colleagues in the Senate would not remove him from office.
Right. And we wish to do the important work. And and we understand, look, the voter will decide, but we wish to work on USMCA. We would rather work with the president since he, you know, our hope is he'll only be in office for another, when they do this by December, for another year. And therefore, we'd rather work with this president as damaged or as guilty and as impeachable as he is. But we want to work with him on the trade agreements, on infrastructure programs, on health care, and move the country forward.
You know, it will be interesting because they still have to bring together the, I'm going to call them the Rahm Emanuel Democrat versus the activist Democrat, the far left. Wow. I just said Rahm Emanuel versus the far left. But think about that. The whole identity politics thing that came out, and where you had a number of Democrats that came out. Who was it? I think Cuellar from Texas, and a number of them. They're going to have to gel to get a nominee. So who wins that battle? Well, Hillary doesn't get in. Bloomberg gets in. Bloomberg steals only from Biden. Boom. Elizabeth Warren's your nominee. There's your activist right there. Do you have there's your stay-at-home Democrat on the upper demos. Not necessarily just the upper demos, but the people who look at it just the way Rahm Emanuel does, or any of the other prominent Democrats who are discounting and dismissing
they want Trump
the
out.
Identity
they
politics.
The establishment Democrat still wants Trump out, I believe. The establishment Democrat's going to vote no matter what.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean,
we'll
see where it goes, I guess, first for the primary. Does Bloomberg actually have that effect on Joe Biden, or is the establishment putting enough money into Joe Biden saying he can get us the independents?
Let's go to Kendall in Wyoming. Kendall, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Hello. Yeah, I'm a truck driver, so I talk to a whole lot of people in a whole lot of different places, and I've been asking this question to people that are pro impeachment for a while now. I keep asking them, would it matter to you at all if they impeach Trump for something you know is complete hooey, but it works and you got him out? Would it matter to you at all? And I ain't had a one of them yet tell me it would bother them a bit. They don't care.
Yeah.
Facts be damned. They don't care about the facts at all. They just want him gone.
Yep.
They don't care how they do it. They just want him gone. So if the moderate in the House voted against impeachment, I would be scared for their personal safety at that point. I don't see any Democrats not voting for impeachment in the House. And then if the Senate doesn't take it up, I think we would have civil unrest in this country. I think that we'd see a whole new level of craziness that we ain't even dreamed of yet. And I'm not entirely convinced they ain't going to get 20 Republicans to vote to remove
them. They're not
going to happen.
And the evidence that exists now, they're not going to get. Look, they didn't get one. If they were going to get somebody that felt the pressure to do it in the Republicans, it would have been in the House, and they couldn't get one to vote for the inquiry.
But
so they're not going to get.
I don't think we've seen a level of craziness yet that we're going to see.
Doesn't matter.
I think.
What you're saying is Republicans are going to cave because there might be civil unrest. That's not going to happen. That's a flawed analysis of how Republicans are going to. Republicans are not going to say, I'm voting for impeachment because there could be civil unrest.
Yeah, I'll give up my seat. I'll give up my position in the Senate.
Right.
Because there's civil unrest.
Yeah.
No.
It's not going to happen.
No, you had two Democrats, by the way, vote with Republicans already in the House.
Right.
So that's already happened.
Right. So and are Democrats going to say, well, I know this is going to kill me, and this, you think Nancy Pelosi is thinking, no, we need to be concerned about civil unrest. So those 31 Democrats who won in districts that Trump won, we're going to, as I said already, we're going to go after them. And they better watch out for their lives. No. She's going to be defending them, saying everybody, because they want those seats. You think the Democrats want to give up? You think the Democrats in the leadership want to give up? You think Nancy Pelosi wishes to give up her speakership and they wish to give up the House in order to impeach Trump and not kick him out of office? No, she's been fighting it from the very beginning. Why? She's afraid they'll lose the House.
Yeah. I mean, there wasn't civil unrest when she kept saying no impeachment, no impeachment. I mean, she was saying that a few months ago,
right.
No impeachment, and then it changed.
No, but I do agree with the last caller. I know this because the Democrats I talked to, the same thing. Do you care if they impeach Trump, even if it's not impeachable? No, just get him out of office any way you get him. I understand that completely.
Mm-hmm.
That's a far cry. Mm-hmm. From intimidation through civil unrest that will change votes in Congress and the Senate.
Yeah. It may have, if Jeff Flake were still there. that might be the one. I'm not going to count out Romney. But think about how how it will play out in the Senate with those Democrats there.
Yeah, there's even more pressure for Senate Democrats.
Honestly, I don't think the Senate wants to take it up. I don't think the Senate Democrats want to take it up at all.
I bet you if they do impeach, I bet you the pressure for Senate Democrats is that, look, we can't vote for this.
Right.
Because remember, I'm not talking about California, but I'm talking about states where you will see where because it's an entire state and not just a gerrymandered congressional district,
mm-hmm.
that they'll look and go, look, I can't do this.
Mm-hmm.
I can't do this. You're going to increase the lead of the Republicans in the Senate in 2020 if we all vote for it. So, no. But the analysis that the possibility of civil unrest will make Republicans or even Democrats change their vote, I would disagree with that completely.
I think one of the things, if it doesn't go to a vote, one of the other things that they'll cite is the administration invoked executive privilege on the people we know would have been key to greater evidence, even though we believe we had evidence to begin with. This administration blocked us. That is obstruction, but it's time to get on with the work of the American people. They'll do that. They'll blame Trump. They'll blame the Republicans for not bringing it to a full vote if they don't have that headcount.
Yep. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Let's go to Jeff in Roanoke, Virginia. Jeff, impeachment games, of course, what we're talking about. Hi, Jeff. You're on the radio.
And good evening. Good morning. Hi. No, I just sitting here thinking, of course, I've changed my point of view over the course of waiting for the call to come up. But you guys are so close to it, but you haven't hit the target yet. Trump is collateral damage or actually gravy. The target is the United States Senate, control of the Senate. That's where the plan is. That's the only reason you'd run at a brick wall, knowing that you're going to run into a brick wall. It's because you need to be running into that brick wall, because you want this to go to Congress. You want this to go to the Senate. You want the Republicans in lockstep to vote against it, and you want to be able to campaign against the senators that have not been leveraged at this point. to go your way.
Well, yeah, we hit that. We hit it from the opposite direction.
Yeah, and we
hit the pressure on the Senate Democrats.
Right. That's the whole point is that we were making, is that the Republicans are a given. The Democrats, do they want this to come to a vote in the Senate?
We didn't forget about it. What we said was we believe there will be more pressure on Senate Democrats than there will be Republicans. Senate Democrats will be worried. Why? Because of the lack of substance in the impeachment process. But of course, we know. I mean, come on. We haven't been doing this for 10 minutes. We understand that the goal is the Senate, but it's also the presidency.
I mean, because those two will go hand in hand.
Right.
The president wins re-election, then he's going to keep the Senate.
Yeah.
Here is your forecast.
The storm system that brought snow across the interior Northeast and Great Lakes has departed, leaving in its wake record-challenging cold, a gift from Canada. Winter-like air sits over much of the eastern United States. The intensity of the cold will ease during the second half of the week across the eastern half of the nation once the expansive high-pressure system moves off the New England coast. But in most places, temperatures will generally remain below average. Across the center of the country, a fast-moving clipper system has spread snow and some light freezing rain across portions of the plains and Midwest. A ridge of high pressure over California means continued dry and settled conditions across the state. Rain and snow chances will increase across the Pacific Northwest and the interior as an upper level disturbance moves inland. Amounts are expected to be on the lighter side as the system quickly passes through the plains and into the Great Lakes region by Thursday. There's your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm Christopher Cruz.
Cabal of sexist white men. Nightly, Gary McNamara and Eric Harley on Red Eye Radio.
A cabal.
It's not a cabal.
A cabal.
and really, don't be a sexist. Chicks hate that.
What's his name? Matthew Dowd from ABC. Stop being a sexist.
Yeah, man.
You saw what he said about Elise Stefanik, right?
Mm-hmm.
A perfect example of why just electing someone because they're a woman or a millennial doesn't necessarily get you the leaders we need. Whoa.
Yeesh.
Whoa.
Wow.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa. Yes, he was taken to task for that. And I thought she did a pretty good job. And when I saw what he criticized her for, I went, really? You're making that statement now?
Yeah.
And he got blasted and deleted the tweet, of course.
Yeah, he apologized on Twitter. So, you know, that's fine. But no, I thought she did a great job.
Yeah, but he's not really apologizing. Mm. He's apologizing because he got blowback on it.
Yeah, because he's being called out for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To the last caller who said he thought we were missing something this is about getting the Senate. Our whole premise was based on that. Our whole premise was based on the fact that we've talked about for the last week that if this is all they have, and it seems as of yesterday, they're admitting this is all they have, which is hearsay evidence, because when you have the statement from Democrats that hearsay evidence is many times much more credible than direct evidence, you know you're losing at that point.
Yep.
As we had the one lawyer that called today, I think he was like, I can't believe they actually did that. I can't believe they actually said that. And so our point has been all along that Republicans in the Senate will feel no pressure at all if this is all they have, but Democrats in the Senate, because it's a statewide election in many states, may be more likely to vote, now we don't even want to go here, that we don't need to deal with this. Now, after yesterday, the question does come up, and that's where we went on this. We went to the House because we've already covered the Senate. Was in the House when you have 31 Democrats who won districts that Trump took in 2016 that are vulnerable, that are moderate. The Democrats can only lose 16 votes. Is there a possibility that they would lose those 16 votes? Remember, for the inquiry, they got 227.
Mm-hmm.
So does that mean they're only 11 votes away? Now, I know some people didn't show up and things like that, but still. When they got 227, which means they can only lose 10.
Right.
At that particular point. But they need 217. What if, because it was such a horrible day yesterday, just horrible for Democrats. I don't know how anyone could look at that and say, and I include Chris Wallace in that, at times I just have no idea where his thought process is anymore.
I don't.
There seems to be a complete lack of critical thinking. Taylor didn't seem that he was too political, and I believe he did damage to Trump. Why? By saying he disagrees with them in foreign policy?
Well, I there have been a couple of things where Chris Wallace has just been, I think, off the mark and really read into it in a melodramatic way, really. You know, a couple of things going back to the Kavanaugh thing. It just and Napolitano's doing that now. I'm not sure what they're seeing. Napolitano's been off the mark on legal items. I mean, it seems the only contributor at Fox News on the legal items that we can put any credibility into is Alan Dershowitz
or Turley when he's on.
Yeah, Turley,
and both do not like Trump.
Right, these are guys that aren't going to vote for Trump.
Right.
Ever. But they're making the legal case. I don't see, you know, Chris Wallace saying, well, this was a, and where was it? Oh, I think it was the Mueller thing. I think he came back on, you know, when Mueller made the statement, not the Mueller testimony, but the statement that Mueller gave. He came back and, you know, he had this weird take on it. And I thought, what is he seeing that I'm not? Because that whole statement was basically Mueller saying, well, I really couldn't do anything. I did what I was supposed to do. Now it's up to Congress to move on it, which he was basically saying, you guys need to impeach if you think there's something here.
Well, maybe they took his advice.
Well, they finally got around to it.
Yeah. 866-90-RED-EYE. Let's head to you. We go to Wilson in Plainfield, Illinois. Wilson, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Hi.
Good. How are you guys doing tonight?
Good.
Good. I want to revert back to the hearings a little bit, if you'll let me.
Okay.
And listen, I've been on hold for a while. I've been listening to you guys. All these points are awesome, but my point is that Jordan today, when he was talking about the three conversations that those two guys had with Zelensky, and never anything was ever brought up in regards to a bad conversation of this, of that, or anything else. And my point being is that the president makes foreign policy. Now, these bureaucrats have been there for, this guy admitted, 10 years. Ivanovich, who's going to come on Friday, has been there for X amount of time. And while those guys and those gals have been in that positions, they have done nothing for corruption. Ukraine is notorious for being the most corrupt country on the planet. And I believe today there was a conversation about some $23 million that this guy absconded with or did whatever. And Kent said, well, we can't, well, we went to them and we said, well, you know what, we really want our money back, and we've never got our money back. So the point is, Trump says, you know what, when he gets in, he goes, and he made this point before he, while he was running, he said that, you know what, give Crimea back, because I'm tired of the United States giving hundreds of millions, but whatever the number is, to this country when it's all disappearing. So when he goes and says, listen, I want to get to the bottom of this. I want to make sure that you, Zelensky, aren't another one of these other guys. And when we give you the money, it's going to go in the right direction. Now, while we're doing this, oh, by the way, there's a lot of things that are going on, and I'd like you to look into it. And I'm going to have a guy that I want to put in place that get to the bottom of it. Instead of these lifelong bureaucrats or these 20, 10-year, 15-year bureaucrats trying to state policy, whereas the president does the policy. So their noses are all out of joint, and then they're saying, oh, well, the president's not listening to what we say. You know what? The reason why the president listened to what you had to say was because for the last X amount of time, you've done nothing. Nothing.
I think very, very well put. The only thing I would say is it really doesn't matter what their opinion is, whether or whether they did their job or whether they did not do their job. The president is the one who sets foreign policy and not the bureaucrats. Whether they are right or whether they are wrong really doesn't matter. It's who, according to our law, sets policy, and that is the president. The other point, and you didn't mention it, but you wanted to talk about it earlier on, maybe you forgot to bring it up, was you said there was no quid pro quo. They've moved beyond that because they know they can't argue the fact that Zelensky didn't know. So what they're going to is this term bribery, and the new definition of bribery that they have come up with was, it doesn't matter if anybody knew, the president's intent was to do this, and therefore it was wrong to begin with.
Yeah.
Right. Because the president was seeking to get a political advantage, so it doesn't matter whether Zelensky or anybody else knew. The fact that the president thought it, we're back to where we were on obstruction of justice.
Right.
So the quid pro quo is really gone, because they could never make that case, because if Zelensky didn't know about it and they never had any type of direct conversation on it, you can't make that stick. So what they're trying to make stick is the fact that the president or the culture of the people around the president and or Giuliani, this is a case they're trying to make, wanted to do it, and therefore that in itself was their new form of bribery.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Which is, they were using American taxpayer dollars in order to get a personal or political advantage, which would mean you're trying to get Biden out. So whether the other side knows or not now doesn't matter. That's how they moved on from the quid pro quo.
Right, right.
Now, what destroyed that narrative completely and blew that out of the water is, again, when John Solomon, and this, I think the New York Times took him on yesterday, or what was it, here in the last 2 days, took on John Solomon with what's being called a hit piece, because he brought up the emails that were sent from the firm representing the natural gas company, stating that, look, we'd want to have a meeting with you, and the meetings were supposed to be with the State Department about backing off on the pushing for corruption investigations, and they mentioned Biden's name, that he's on our board of directors.
Right.
Well, that kills any chance that you have, to make that point, but that's where they're trying to go.
Because you go after, of course, the messenger there. You go after Solomon. As they have done before. I mean, that's the liberals have been. And I noticed that like several days ago, them attacking John Solomon.
Yes.
It was on social media. There were a couple of people that, and I thought, oh, that's interesting. Because why would you go after John Solomon? Well, fine. He's a political hack. Great. Debate his facts. Debate what he has found.
You can't.
That's real information. That's data. That's what he does.
So you have to say he's associated, and you have to say that Sean Hannity has used his evidence. Rush has used his evidence. Mark Levin has used his stories and his investigations. Therefore, he's in cahoots with all of them. Therefore, he's tainted.
Yeah.
And as we've said, no, I actually don't care whether, you know, you like Trump or dislike Trump. I agree with Jonathan Turley and Dershowitz because they're right on the law.
Yep.
Doesn't matter who they voted for.
Right.
They're right on the law. It's that simple.
Yep.
Their facts are correct. And that's all that matters, and that's what we try to break down here on this show. Like I said, when I put that little comment on the New York Times on their Facebook site, and, you know, where I did the REO Speedwagon lyrics, oh, it's called Every Name in the Book.
Mm.
It was sure. just, it right. was, you know, from they were just furious. It's amazing how I do believe that the trolls and the left in this country believe that if they name call, it actually has an effect on those that they oppose, that they believe it weakens them somehow. And I find
that's shouting down of anybody they disagree with.
I find that humorous. I really do.
Yeah.
It's like, sorry, we're adults.
Yeah, that's about as childish as it gets.
It doesn't bother us. In fact, we know we're winning when you do that. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Alan, Wayne, Tom, Gary, and more of your calls and comments coming up. We want to get to as many calls as possible because I think you and I have probably covered this every way possible, have we not?
Yeah, I think it, well, because it just fell short. I just wonder what the average rank-and-file Democrat watching all this is thinking. I mean, if they are a critical thinker, if they're able to just set it aside for just a moment, because you looked at Mueller. Mueller's testimony was horrible. That was a horrible day. But if you look at the nature of that entire thing, the Mueller investigation itself, that was really the only way it could end, with a botched testimony. And this, you know, impeachment fiasco, circus of clowns that continues with the top clown, Adam Schiff. Yesterday really was the only way it was going to go. You know, we asked, wait a minute, how do they make this look nefarious? You have to be a political hack to look at yesterday's testimony and think there's something there on the president.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.